it's absolutely fantastic to be here. The mammy was from Cove, so Cork has a very special place in my heart. And the collection of poems that I've chosen for tonight are, a lot of them are about the mammy, some of them about the daddy. So they're, it's kind of a self-indulgent night for me, so I hope you forgive me. I get maudlin during the set. Okay, so some of the poems are quite short, so I'll roll some of them in, and I assume it's just, you know, there's not going to stop or start, I just mosey through them. That's great. Okay, a little drink of water and off we go. Okay, I want to kind of start at the beginning. This next poem that I got, the first poem I want to read, I actually wrote it when I was down to the Cork Spring. Poetry Festival. I was going for a little jog along by the station, and I was thinking of my mum, and this poem came to me. It's called Family Senses. Four live births, nine pregnancies, one stopping at 4 months. My father wrapping the contents in newspaper to bring downstairs for disposal. On the final pregnancy, blood clots the size of a fist. The doctor saying, I think you've lost it. And you, hands cupped about my heart, refusing to let go. And this next one was from my first collection. It's called The World Reduced to Sound. Lying in my single bed, a childhood illness for company. A world reduced to sound. Behind my eyes, the darkness echoed. Inside my chest, uneven notes rattled and wheezed. Beyond the door, a floorboard creaked. A muffled cough across the landing grew faint and faded away. My hot air pressed against the pillow, tuned into the gallop of tiny hooves in blessed, sleepy silence. In the morning, steady, maternal footsteps sang on the stairs. I loved that song. And when I was sick, books came to me in the arms of my father. He'd stick his head around the door, ask me how I was, perch his large frame at the end of my bed, pull out books hidden in coat pockets, place flying carpets within my reach. And I'm at a stage now, I'll be 50 in October, my own kids are nearly grown up, and mum died 2.5 years ago, and dad is 94, and he's in the advanced stages of dementia, he's in a nursing home. And I really feel compelled to tell their story over and over again, because otherwise somehow it'll be lost. And it's something even a few years ago as a poet wouldn't have felt important to me. But for the last few years, you know, there are certain poems that we just feel we need to write. They're just insistent. They're just drumming. They're saying, write me, write me, write me. And a lot of the poems in the new collection are poems that just felt like they really needed to be written. This next poem, and if Rosie was here, I dedicate it to Rosie. This poem is about Cove. Every summer when we were young, we'd go down to Cove for 3 weeks. I would stay in my grandmother's house, and it was, you know, there's something about those childhood holidays where it's almost like an unreal landscape, an unreal world. And my dad, even though he's forgotten a lot of things, he had a very strong relationship with Cove, and he married into Cove, but he still, when I go and see him sometimes, he doesn't know who I am, but he'll often say to me, did you get the train up? Because he thinks that I'm from Cove, because that has such a strong place in his heart. So this poem is called, And Cove Was Cousins. The train to Cove, we're nearly there. Dunkettle, Little Island, Cove Junction, Fota, Carrigaloe, Rushbrook, where the Allens live. Cove Station, end of the line, check under the seats before we go. 11 Harbour Hill, a marble step worn and worn. Granny and Mammy inside, talking, smoking, taking no notice. Go on outside and play. The stag's head glaring in the hall, because Grandad liked to shoot, but he was dead before I was born. aunties who looked like Mammy but sounded different. She sounded different when she was with them, talking, smoking, taking no notice, one outside in play. Dad on a bench reading the paper, the promise that 99 is a for good. Dinner time. Big ones in the front room with no one to mind them, punching, laughing, planning danger. Small ones in the kitchen with grown-ups taking no notice. Soggy fish fingers, mash and beans. Go on outside and play. Racing up to Auntie Moore's for our bath on a Saturday night because Granny only had one toilet out the back. Under our bed, a chamber pot with flowers inside in case we had to pee at night. A piano out of tune in the sitting room upstairs. Quiet, and Granny's in bed with Gregory Peck. Outside the window, a liner passes slowly. A smaller boat, another big one. The rain has stopped. Go on outside and play. Trips to Koskinny. Can we stop in Hurley's for Sidona? My legs are tired. Are we there yet? Stop. Winger. Mackerel are breaking on the water's edge. A tangle of rods. Stand back. A hook will take your eye out. Flashing in water. Hanging from hooks. Twitching in boxes. Mud and butts on the pier. 3 weeks later, one last visit to the prom. It won't be long until you're back. Check under the beds before you go. Backwards journey, taller, browner. Cathedral bells still singing in my ears. And the next one, it's a little drink now. This next one's back in Dublin, at the zoo. And we lived, even though we lived quite close to the zoo, we'd only go once a year because, like most families, we could only afford a trip once a year, so we go to the zoo. It was a big deal. So this is just called At the Zoo. I'm wearing a jumper you knitted, smiling at the camera. You're smiling too, but holding your handbag like it feels too heavy. Like the time I got lost down by the seal enclosure, the crowd hiding your familiar shape. Running past the elephants, the polar bears, the penguins, frantic for a glimpse of your coat, your handbag, your mammy outline amongst these strangers. Until finally, we found each other by the bathhouse, tearful, strained by the separation, the afternoon unsteady around us. And the next piece I'm going to do, it's quite a long piece, and I did it down in stanza, so the lads have heard this. This is mental health and mental illness are things that we talk about now all the time. But when we were growing up, it just wasn't a subject that was talked about or discussed. And my mum was diagnosed as bipolar kind of later in her life, but she had to go through years and years of not knowing what was wrong. And I suppose as a child, somebody who had bipolar, it was very hard sometimes to make sense of what was going on. And in the first collection, I had only one poem written from my mum, and she wasn't impressed with that. She was saying, "How come there's a few poems in there for the dad, but there's only one in there for me?" And I kind of knew at the time that I needed to write this particular poem. It took me 8 long, hard months to write. And then I knew that once I had that poem written, somehow it would then unlock things for me. And I'm so glad that I did, because about a year later, Mum got sick, and then it allowed me then to easily kind of write the poems that I needed to write around that. So this poem is called Testament, and I suppose it's for anybody who suffers from mental illness themselves, or is in the company of those who have mental illness, and so it's trying to make sense of it. She keeps asking, in her own way, why I do not write about her. Why is it poems about my father come easily and naturally, settling in on the page like a comforting presence, so the world can see just from a glance the strong, clean lines of lifelong love. She trolls my poems for evidence of a daughter's love, comes up empty-hearted every time. So I will write this poem for her, knowing as I do the unbreakable rule that must be followed when I write. Circumstances, timelines, place names can all be changed to suit the mood, or maybe to provide that extra syllable to fit the line. That is acceptable in the wider scheme of poetry. But I cannot change the deep down truth of what I know, of what I feel, of what is real, intangible and tangled up. I will begin at the beginning in case I stumble if I try to jump on when the memories are already moving. A cot in the corner of their bedroom, and I lie quietly, listening for her footsteps, waiting for the rush of love she brings with her. And now she comes as she always did, to tuck me in, and bending over she kisses me, and the world is safe and warm. But as she moved towards the door, she left a trace of her sadness behind, and it settled like dust on my bones. Before I could pronounce the word, I knew Mammy meant home. I knew Mammy meant tired. Even to write these words, to commit them to paper, feels like a betrayal of the effort it took her to just keep on going. But the alternative betrays us too, denying as it can't help but do the rich and varied layers laid down of a complex, deep-felt love. I would tumble out the school door at home time, and she'd be waiting, her smile outstretched to catch me. We'd walk home together hand in hand, and I'd tell her all about my day. It's funny how in the remembering there's never any brother in sight, and the sky is always blue. That memory, sweet and uncomplicated, tells the whole truth, that sometimes the word mammy simply translates as love. But other days, when least expected, the atmospheric pressure changed. Tap tap on the glass, tap tap on the mind, where will the hour point today? There's a weather system moving in on clouds gathering across the sky. Momentum building, energy rising, she keeps herself busy with projects and tasks. Busy, busy, into the night. It has to be finished. It has to be right. Can no one else see? It has to be right. Running on empty, she deteriorates fast. The barometer indicates falling. Tap, tap on the glass, tap, tap in her mind, where will the arrow point today? Inside her head, it feels like rain. Persistent, heavy, exhausted. Weather-beaten, she takes to the bed, the only place of shelter she knew, but she never left us long. Her mothering instinct, stronger than pain. Still, I missed her when she was gone. She lies in bed, unable to rise. The sadness has returned, and this time will not let her go. Drained of energy and the will to get up, she lies there, helpless as a child. I put my head around the door to check on her, to see if she's come back again, but she is sleeping now, a restless sleep that brings no peace. Something stirs in me, a subtle, seismic shift of sorts, catching my teenage body off balance. I stumble over the threshold, heel overhead, and land feet first beside her bed. Like Alice before us in Wonderland, our dimensions have mysteriously changed. I am big and she is small. She is tiny. I am tall in this strange, upended world. Survey the room with my new eyes, tidy away what needs to be tidied, tucking in the side of the sheet. Folding away my teenage years. Through the looking glass, I see the child in her, the mother in me. Troops were called in to save the day, doctors with their expertise offering advice and pills that promised to numb the pain. But it took a while to find the mix that matched her needs, and she was tossed upon the waves of a little dose of this might work, or a little dose of that might do. But eventually the storm passed on, left her feeling like her usual self, almost, but not quite as good as new. Sleeves rolled up and apron tied, she resumed the household duties, with her usual diligent care. And everything was as it should be. Only now the word daughter felt heavy as stone, mother as flimsy as air. These moments in time preserve like scratches on an old LP. Keep playing through my adult life, the needle stuck in the deepening groove, repeating, repeating, repeating. I want my mommy to be well. I want her back to stay. I want her to leave that other child behind, the one who kicks and drags her down, leaving her sad and far away. If I become a mommy, what if I'm unwell? What if I can't stay? Who will I be? Where will I go if I am sad and far away? I've been humming that tune for years. Now that it is written down, the needle moves beyond the groove, and I can hear another song playing soft and low. The music sounds the same, an old familiar feeling, but the lyrics tell a story you never listened to before. It's the story of a woman, a mother, a warrior, who never stopped fighting, who never gave in. Though exiled and lost and far from home, she never gave up. She always came back. Right up to the very end, she always came back. And is that enough to satisfy the girl who lives inside those memories? It's enough. Love is more than a clumsy poem or a weather front moving across the sky. It's footfall sounding on the stairs, surmounting every step and turn. A landing breached, a door pushed open, and the world is safe and warm. Yeah, I just realised my set is so massage. There you go. That's just the tragedy of it. But anyway, so moving on to another one. So Mam actually loved that poem. She was delighted. She was chuffed. All she said was, make sure you don't read it when I'm in the room. She said, read it anytime you want, but not with me in the room. So this next one is called Staunch. I've sat in the donor's clinic 29 times in almost as many years. Left arm outstretched, needle inserted into the vein while I looked the other way. 29 units of blood, O positive, same type as you. 10 units you've needed since Christmas, and it's still only January. I do the maths in my head. I won't be able to keep you alive. So in January 2011, I think, Mam was diagnosed with leukemia, and ironically, the mental illness was just so much harder for her to cope with, where leukemia was something very straightforward and it was something that people could easily talk about. And really those last 2 years of my life, in some ways, were really, really kind of happy, content years where she really felt loved and appreciated and accepted. So even though you wouldn't wish an illness on anybody, it really did, ultimately I think it really kind of rounded Mam's life off, and I think she died with great dignity and acceptance, which was fantastic. This poem is just called All Fall Down. Just, I suppose, when you're witnessing somebody dying, just yourself trying to get your head around it. I've been clearing out, she said, handing me a bag full of pocket-sized tissues. 20 or more packets of tissues, some unopened, most with one or two missing in action. I took them home, along with the gloves and scarves you knew you wouldn't need again. And we took to using them like the stash would last forever, down the end of school bags and swimming bags, jackets and coat pockets. We took to using them like they could be replaced when the last one went missing. And the next one, is just, it's called a reframe, and you know, when I read it. I head over to visit you. You've spent the night in hospital. Platelets so low, you bled just for the heck of it. We don't panic anymore, do we? Like in the beginning when the sight of runaway blood prompted illegal U-turns. Racing back to St. James's Hospital. Stay calm, stay calm. Keep pressure on it. I head over to visit you. Sammy the dog has eaten your bottom teeth. Tired of chocolates still in their wrappers, pincushions, hearing aids, and rubbish from the bin. He was tempted by your teeth instead. And you are left with half a smile and someone else's blood inside you, coursing through your stubborn veins. That silly dog, lying on the couch, butter with the mouth in his mouth. And we are all laughing, you and me and Dad. And I'm thinking this is as far from dying as we can hope to be. This one is called Me and Bobby McGee. Do you want to sing a few? No, he's copyrighted that song.
No.
Okay, me and Bobby McGee. When the others left, I stayed behind, sat weeping by your side, a child again, entreating you to stay. Until your stillness entered me, and slipping my hands under your body to where your warmth still lingered, I sat with you a short time longer, while outside the door, life without you waited to begin. A friend called round to pay her respects, asked me, when you took your last breath, did I feel your soul or spirit or whatever we call it leave your body? And where do I think you are now? I said, when you took your last breath, I felt you dissipate. Now you are nowhere. Now you are everywhere. The crib you made still sitting on the TV stand. Three wise men looking towards the sky, searching for a star to guide them. Joseph with his arm around his pregnant wife, a puzzled look on his knitted brow. And a few days after, I turned the dial to Sunshine 101. Christmas Officer singing Me and Bobby McGee. Words and music filling the car until there wasn't any room left to breathe. It took another week before you turned up in my dreams. I think we spoke to one another, but neither of us knew what to say. And then the dream moved on without you. My God, I didn't realize my set is pretty depressing tonight. Anyway, onto the next depressing poem.
Keep them coming.
Yeah.
You're so used to depressing them. So, my dad was a wild thing when he was young. He was the black sheep of the family. He ran away when he was about 16. He lived rough for a few years. And kind of ignored the family. And then when he met my mum, the whole idea was then that he would somehow redeem himself in front of the family. And so when mum died, it was like it triggered something in him, and he was then kind of worried that somehow he hadn't redeemed himself. So this poem was for my dad. It's called Unfinished Business. On their wedding day, his father said, "I'll forgive you everything if you do right by this girl." The unfinished education, the empty table setting at Christmas time, the family name unpolished, unloved. I never met my grandfather, but I remember my grandmother, a small woman, her mouth eternally disappointed with life. Dad bringing us down to visit her to the small dark house on Bolton Road where the furnishings took themselves too seriously. And later in that same house, I found a studio photograph of the polished family. My grandfather, something familiar in the way he's leaning against the table. My dad, a beautiful child about 3 years old, sitting beside his brothers and sisters. And there, my grandmother, upright and disapproving, staring into the camera, daring it to blink. That blonde-haired little boy, the man who loved his wife for 60 years, couldn't wait to cycle home from work, gave up his wages every week, cooked our fry on Saturday morning, scrubbed our nails, polished our shoes. Still wonders if he's done enough. Still wonders if he's been forgiven. And it still crops up with him. He kind of just says, you know, was I a good son? Or anyway, breaking heart. That first year, so this poem, that first year, it's only a very short poem. It's one of those poems, it took me months to write. You think, you know, trying to get around in loads of different ways, and then eventually, as these poems often do, then they just kind of write themselves in a few lines. So I'll just call that first year. The world spun on, same rotation from west to east, same speed, same seasons in the same order. Tides do their usual thing, waves made their lapping sound, seagulls screeched their indignation. Over in number 80, small changes were noted. One less knife, one less fork, one less plate. No back and forth from a conversation 60 years in the making. Elsewhere, the faint sound of inn pipes, slide guitars, pianos playing traditional laments, and Louis Armstrong having to remind us it's a wonderful world. And the next three poems are... we're okay for time for 27 minutes? Is that okay for the moment?
Sure.
Yeah. The next three poems are... I've written since Dad went into the nursing home. He's in the nursing home since January. Really, he's so well looked after. They're absolutely gorgeous, I must say.
Say another...
Five
minutes.
Well, that won't take that long yet. So these three are just... I'll run these in together. These three are just... poems about the nursing home. So this first is called Undressing. Smaller items he places on the bedside locker. Who came to visit this afternoon? The name of the second eldest son. Leaning down, he removes the colour of his wife's eyes, their honeymoon in the Isle of Man, the last 2 years before she died. Gently he removes father, son, husband, brother, slips them under the pillow for safekeeping, pulls back the covers, turns out the light. And there's a young one who comes up to the nursing home, the six-year-old young one, and she's just amazing. She's just an absolute ball of energy. And you just see how everybody lights up when she comes in. So this is called Six-Year-Old Jessie Comes to Visit. Striped tights, furry boots, T-shirt stretched over her belly, announcing to the world, laughing girls are prettiest. Arms and legs and shimmy hips obeying the moves she's seen on TV. Now she's Katie, now she's Taylor, swiftly racing down the hall, past the wheelchairs, past the walkers. Now she's racing back again. Stomping, twirling, pirouetting. Amazing the audience who sit in a circle around her dance floor, bodies cupped to catch the sparks flying from her feet. She's a great little character, she really is. And then last weekend? Yeah, the weekend before last, our dog of 13 years had to get her put down. Miss her, don't miss the thousands and millions of hairs that would tumbleweed around the house. But so I wrote this poem, and they should be comforted. The only time I heard my father cry was when his dog died. He'd returned from the vet, was at the kitchen sink, shoulders hunched, hands trailing in the soapy water. She was such a lovely little thing. Yesterday, we had our family pet put down. The house, on our return, hollow with her absence. Today I visited Dad, found him dozing in the sitting room with the other residents, sat by his side, stroked his arm, felt the urge to wake him, tell him about the grace of a final movement, head lowering to rest on a pause. And I'm going to finish up with this one, and thanks a million for listening. A little bit of a rise in this one, seeing as I've depressed you so much. Thanks so much for listening. It really felt important for me coming down here to Cork to do poems about Mammy. My auntie Maura, who lives in Cove, she rang me on Friday and she was like, "You're in the Evening Echo." She's 89. Evening Echo. It was just like the moment. And Mal would have been chuffed to know that I was in the Evening Echo. So this is called Rise. Dare we let go of all the things we lost in the fire? You are still breathing. I am still breathing. The lighthouse still stands at the far end of our south wall. And just today on the canal, 20 swans or more took sudden flight. Their wings low and heavy, gathering speed over startled waters. Passers-by stopped in their tracks, mesmerized. And for one weightless moment, forgot they could not fly. Thanks for listening.